Thank you all for being here. And we have Senator Bundy's out of town, but we have with us Senator Seekins, Senator Wagner, Senator Elton, myself, Senator Stevens, and others will show up here shortly. And Mr. President, pleased to have you here. Thanks so much for coming down. And and the plan was, I think, to do a presentation today of the university, and we'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Mark Hamilton. I'm president of the University of Alaska statewide system. And that is correct, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to address some of the issues that have been brought up as your oversight committee has listened to various briefings. And I hope have a bit of a discussion, if that would please you and the committee. We've handed out a little packet, and the cover slide you might well recognize is the slide that David Jones had used for his presentation. I did talk to Mr. Jones just briefly, and I will tell you that this kind of a presentation that he gave sends most states into apoplexy. Oh my God, how are we ever going to be able to measure up, meet up with these kinds of needs for state policy oversight, for state directions, etc. I've looked over this list. I thought so at the time, and now we've had a little more time to kind of look through this particular list. And Mr. Chairman, my report to you would be that the state of Alaska needs to be very, very proud of its progress and its process and its policy as are outlined by the particular list that David Jones put together. The idea of reinforcing state priorities. I can't think of anything that could be more direct, could be more collaborative, and could have, wasn't just a great idea people had yesterday in 2000, this body put out Senate Bill 281 that after they had worked with the university and said, what are the kinds of performance measures that make some sense? These are the performance measures that we have outlined with this report that you also have, and I won't list them to you, but it is many, many, many more than were indicated by David Jones as being necessary in order to direct the going forward of the state university. We have continued to report these, although they haven't been required of other agencies for quite some time, because we believe very strongly that the university is doing exactly the right thing and wants to continue to look at those. As you look at those, you'll discover that the state has indicated its priorities and that the university is meeting those measurements quite well, continues to move toward longer-term goals, and continues to experience intermediate goals that show progress across the board. If you had to put in a couple of words what the policy guidance that the university has gotten over the 8 years that I've been here, it's jobs, 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 meet the workforce needs, and we've done this. And teachers, nurses, allied health, engineers, and cranking up on the gas line, and also have cranked up through the APIC program in addressing the retirement of workers on the slope. It also directs us to seek research efforts that are Alaska related, and those include fisheries, health, transportation, economics, where entire centers have been discovered. The other thing that that has been a policy consideration here, very, very clear, is university, you need to discover as many ways as possible to find yourself external resources. And I think, frankly, that's probably been long-term, one of our greatest achievements. I think you're familiar with the assessment that that I gave in one brief meeting here, and although it bears repeating in my mind, since 1986, where we were funded $167 million, GF. I'm familiar with this because the very first year I was here, this body gave me some money for the university and in fact brought our budget back to just short of $167 million. So in 13 years, we had gone nowhere in nominal dollars. I related to you that just on a whim, I looked at our full budget request this year and reduced that to constant 1986 dollars, and I continue to say you couldn't make this up. My budget request, full budget request this year in constant 1986 dollars is $167 million. So in short, the university has not had an increase in purchasing power in 21 years. Cumulatively. On the other hand, non-general funds have increased during that same period from $85 million in 1986 to about $450 million projected this year. Obviously, those are not unrelated. You have to have support. You have to have general funds in order to have it survive. It's also not true to tell you that the university didn't suffer from that, the issue, and it's been, as you know, very, very uneven with essentially zero, even in nominal dollars, for 13 straight years, and now picking up to about 5% plus or minus a year. I mean, move down to the idea of maintain necessary institutional capacity. And I think in that case, we kind of have a mixed report card. Maintaining necessary institutional capacity in the fixed cost area, my cumulative record here in 8 years is I have received funding that is only $7.2 million short of my increase in fixed cost over that same period of time. I'm not proud of losing more slowly than my predecessors. Three of the last 7 years, we have in fact funded my full fixed costs. And in all but 2 years, you have funded my payroll. That's obviously tremendously important that we can at least pay the bills. And in that sense, we have maintained minimum necessary institutional capacity in terms of the general fund. We've not done nearly so well in the capital side, which is why the Board of Regents this year made as their number one capital project $98 million worth of R&R and M&R to continue to fix. This is above and beyond the commitment that the board has made with general funds to contribute a very specific amount, watched very carefully against M&R and R&R, about $20 million worth a year that we put into that. And so we're not doing as well in that particular area. As we look at things like community campus, I know that there's several members of this oversight committee who are interested in that. I meet twice a year with the major administrative units to track down what is your budget plans for the year, how are you utilizing the monies that we have dispersed to you, and there's a separate category each time. Show me what's going on your branch campuses. They have, over this 8 year period of time, received a 35% increase in their general fund. We have as a university, received 29. So they are certainly keeping track and just a bit above pace. A question by David Jones. Are contributions affordable to the state and to the students? And obviously, it's your job to determine whether they are affordable to the state. I'm very concerned about affordability to students. I think you're aware that we have raised tuition 10% a year for the last 4 years, and that's compounded. Now, the students are willing to do that, although if you want to feel like the Lone Ranger, you be the guy asking for a tuition increase, and you get to talk to about everybody that you can imagine about the pain of such things, and I think that's real, albeit we have at the University of Alaska one of the lowest tuition rates of a state university in this country. We are getting by this issue with some concerns by doing a couple of things. Tuition rates, in some sense, are not the issue. Affordability is the issue, and that's usually the ones that people try to look at. We have, I believe it's quadrupled, because we've actually doubled since last year, and that was after a three-year effort, of getting people to get the forms, fill out the forms to address national grant opportunities. The FAFSA program, it stands for. There's a problem in the state of Alaska, and that is we have a national means test that's given on that, and we have many of our students meet that national means. I think it's 18,000. If you draw 18,000 a year, you're eligible for little or no Pell Grant aid. Obviously, it's an issue. We can go ahead. If your parent, yeah. If you're still living with, yeah. If you're not independent, yeah. Your parents' money's count against you as well.
I'm sorry. So if a family earns over $18,000, they are not eligible for the Pell.
Your eligibility begins to limit with every dollar over that fixed amount. You still can receive some up to a place where you just X'd out completely.
Even a legislator makes more than that. So,
you don't bother to apply then. You wouldn't make it. We have had some success, especially in our workforce programs, and this is where your policy begins to pay off, and one of the side benefits of it is we have received some employer aid and/or employer reimbursement to students. So they've come to learn more about their job, upscale their skills a little bit, and wise employers have chosen to invest in that program. You have Ford runs a program called Asset, where they contribute a very significant amount of money to the program, and then the individuals taking that program work for that dealership for a salary, and these things are tremendously important to our students. We've seen both of these in the case of healthcare. We've seen it engineers, some business programs, although that's typically at the master's level.
Oil companies
have done this for some of the skill-related programs. And even in the case where it is just a job offering as a sort of an internship, it makes an enormous amount of difference to our students. So the affordability continues to be an issue for us. The other reason that the students have been willing to do it thus far is it has been accompanied with some modest program growth. And if they can see that they're going to have more opportunities to study or a wider course of studies, they're much more willing to pay up. Question is viewed as being fair. This, I think, is probably, from my perspective, trying to make sure that you are dispersing money that is needed for each of the campuses to function. And I think every one of them would tell you, I don't get enough money. As I told you, just generically, the branch campuses, community colleges, have gotten about 35% of the money we received, and we have had a 29% increase in base. So there's an equitability there. It's a different question than fairness, perhaps, but it's equitable. There's always a constant issue between Anchorage and Fairbanks that has to do with a huge number of students, but not that same percentage with in the distribution percentage of the dollars. Very hard to compare those. We did this 10 years ago, put together a committee that was headed by, at that time, the Chancellor of UAA, Lee Gorsuch, and Wendy Redmond, to try to take this thing apart. Let's look at the apples to apples comparison. We learned a lot from it, but the first kind of discovery was it's a wash. I mean, it's really very, very nearly the way you would divide it, starting from scratch. We're actually doing that again, because it ends up just being important to morale and rumor killing to lay this out. You know, you see, take the $30 million physical plant that Fairbanks has, you move that and say, okay, that one doesn't count, you know, because obviously Anchorage gets the utilities a different way. You start to look at the PhD programs, master's degrees in science and the like, that cost a little more. Try to get it down. So you get down to journalism department, English department, history department, and what we found last time was this one seems to run those similar programs a little better, and then the next program they don't run it quite as efficiently. But I'm comfortable that there has been fairness, and that we'll continue to do it that way. Transparent is an area where I absolutely believe we are a national example. I cannot imagine how we could have a greater transparency in our budget, in our programs, in our budget distribution, our initiative process. I think those of you who were here when those things began several years ago, for the first 3 years, I took every single dime of initiative funding that I was given and put the programs up on the web specifically for the purpose of transparency. 24/7, anybody who want to could look it up and find out every dollar. And these things were, I mean, hired this professor at this date and bought this at that date. They were hugely difficult to maintain. I stopped that kind of thing after about 3 years, because I think at that stage of the game, my assessment was, we've demonstrated, and I'm going to stop the pain here of people putting that on the web constantly. We have an ad hoc committee on accountability and sustainability that has continued now for about 4 years, where you bring everybody in the institution together in various subcommittees to talk about what are some ways we can save dollars. And as you might well suspect, it's very, very hard to go find, oh boy, there's $2 million we don't need. What you find are things as simple as, you know, we're mailing people a copy of their salary and their leave and everything. It's on the web. 99% are direct deposit. They can get it from their bank. Well, that was $70,000 that we were spending on postage and the like that you could scratch that one off. I mean, those are the kinds of things you end up finding. We've got more than 100 that we have gone through. Obviously, you have to look at outsourcing. We've continued to do that. It's a very, very active program, and it's one that I trust a great deal because we have outsourced some things, monitored them, and said, that's not good enough, and taken it back. A couple of areas like the maintenance area around the dorms, you've got to be pretty sure you are comfortable with the personnel policies of the people that you're letting walk in and out of your dorms. And that's when we decided to take back. Just had a great, small things count. Just had a great breakthrough with garbage trucks. And we had three garbage trucks running around emptying things and found out if you could get this company says, well, we've got one really big garbage truck, so if you just let us take it over, and we'll just use one garbage truck, and we'll change all your Dempsey Dumpsters to our brand, and so now we got one unbelievably beautiful, need to ride in at some time, garbage truck that is settling. I mean, we're that kind of detail to look for every single dime you can find. Transparency is, I think it's absolutely without peer. Matter of fact, a former colleague of this body, Eldon Mulder, runs consulting business, and one of the things that he is most actively engaged in is talking to the other legislature about the kind of accountability and transparency. And he talked to him no more than a month ago, and he said that, because he asked me, he said, well, can one of these guys call you? One, they don't believe it. And then the second thing they do is, what did you do to them? I mean, how did you make them respond to that? As it turns out, you just had a dummy here who thought if the legislature said that's what you're supposed to do, you probably ought to do it. This seemed reasonable to me, but in any case, this is not common practice around this nation. Then finally, you should contain incentives for institutional responsiveness. Well, let me tell you what you've done. SB 137, Workforce Development, you have a bit of money that is specifically designed to go toward programs that produce Alaska's most needed professions.
Mark,
I'm sorry?
Just let me, SB 137 doesn't mean anything to these guys. It was SB 137 4 years ago.
Oh, okay, I'm
sorry.
We
still refer to it that way. They're called the TVEP funds, which are the
Training and Vocational Education Program funds.
It shows up as a program under your program receipts. It's a special funding stream that comes off of the unemployment insurance to fund training in the state.
In any case, very prescriptive. It tells us what we can fund with it and what we can't. So there's an incentive for institutional responsiveness. By the way, internally, we have instituted performance-based budgeting, which if you haven't tried that one, I want to tell you that's a winner. It took about 3 years to have the institution embrace that. But we now redistribute two general funds based on performance of our MAUs. And believe me, this is not everybody try hard and let's just make nice and deliver it out. I mean, last year, I won't mention the recipients, but last year the dividing was 1 million and the low was 70,000. So it makes a difference if you're gearing your budget toward performance. And of course, what are you supposed the performance measures are they are the ones that we were told we were supposed to do by this body. We had a two-day session just last week in Anchorage, where we had the community campuses come together to talk about what their specific performance objectives ought to be. Because as we have discovered in talking to these external groups, you come into Alaska with a list that works for Stanford and missions and measures that work for Stanford that don't work all that well for community campuses. They need to be responsive. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to teach the course that produces the most credit hours. They may teach the course that provides the highest trained workforce for their local community. So it's a different drill. So they're putting together their measures upon which we will base performance that are specifically aimed toward them. So I look at this thing that Jones has brought all around the country and made people wonder why they bothered and moan and groan about how they'll never get here. And I would tell you, I think the state of Alaska ought to be terribly proud of these measures. They make a difference. They make an enormous difference to the university. I will tell you quite frankly, they are important to me to be able to manage that and say, I'm sorry, those funds don't go for that program. These are the priorities, and those are the ones that we're going to fund. And in some cases, it's simply not legal, or it's certainly not ethical to use SB 137, in my vernacular, whatever she said it was, monies to do other than the intent for which it was laid out in the first place. On the measuring up, which is your second sheet, this might well be a case where some individuals want to have a discussion on this, because these are the kinds of things that we ended up in the meeting that we ended up talking to about 7:30 one meeting here. As we began to deal with these, how adequately are students being prepared for education and training beyond high school? I can tell you that ought to be a concern and an issue and a priority for the state legislature. I can tell you that university can't wash their hands and say, well, that's K-12. We can't be involved in that. As a matter of fact, we've really discovered exactly the opposite. In some of our most productive programs, they have begun by our going to high schools and even junior high schools, finding individuals with skills and mapping out for them, here's what you're going to need to do in order to be able to play at the university in, let's say, an engineering course. You're going to need to take these two math courses, and discovered in some cases that the math course was not offered at the high school. We then, if we have the right folks and a little cohort that can go through, we've managed to get that course taught either by our own folks doing distance or by simple encouragement with the principal or the superintendent in the area to make sure that these particular bright kids have the opportunity to move forward. On a different approach to that, we've just done it 1 year with the Fairbanks Chamber, so I'll go back and try to see how this all worked out. But it's absolutely clear we need to get people into high schools very early on, ninth grade or eighth grade kind of a level. We need lots of folks. This isn't, you know, just the visiting astronaut that comes down once in a while. We need to have pipe fitters in there, IBEW folks in there. We need to have mechanics in there. We need to have people begin to spell out for these youngsters what a job is and what it entails, because some of the biggest complaints by our by the employers in the state have relatively little to do with education. They have a whole lot to do with attitude, showing up on time, being presentable, being able to talk and complete sentences, and these kinds of things. Our youngsters need to hear this from the workforce, from workers, and certainly from employers. And Fairbanks Chamber took that on and began a program, only the first year of it here. We're going to have to see how they did with it. I can't think it can do anything but help. But you've got to be involved. I think you're aware. I don't think it's I think it's going to end up being partially funded this year, but you may be aware of the teacher mentoring program. We address more than 300 new teachers in the state, selected individuals from the district, essentially bought them out as master teachers. Program involves monthly site visits, usually 2 days, weekly telephone conference, and daily emails to get young teachers up to speed more quickly. Initial results of that are absolutely remarkable. Out of those 300 and something, historically, we would have lost somewhere between 15 and 25 of them. By Christmas, we lost zero. And what we know is if you can get a teacher up to speed more quickly and feel supported and they stay there longer, you're going to have student achievement. It's either that or we don't know anything about education. So getting involved in the high schools is something that that we have begun. We need to do more of it, without a doubt. This was a federal grant that the university had secured about 3 years ago. Great partnership with the education and early childhood development folks. And that program is going to bear enormous fruit for us. Participation. Do state residents enroll in education and training beyond high school? It is, in this day and age, it is essentially unavoidable. When I talk to high school classes, one of the first things I tell them is, I'm going to get you sooner or later. I mean, unless you want a career as the fry guy at McDonald's, I'm going to get you sooner or later. Because the number of jobs in this country that require post-secondary education at the certificate level, at the associate level, are just overwhelming. There's a very interesting switch in roles or something that has taken place. When I went to high school, or when I went to college, kids would work construction in order to pay for college. I literally now have kids coming to college to gain the skills to go into construction. The math requirements for Pipefitters Union are calculus and algebra. I mean, it's remarkable. We have a course called Math for the Trades. I mean, this is to enter the apprenticeship program. They're very, very high math requirements on many of these apprenticeship programs, because otherwise they're going to spend, I mean, this is an 8,000-hour apprenticeship program in Pipefitters. They're not going to waste that time on somebody who can't handle the math that is associated with it. So what we know is our current high school graduation rates are the lowest in the country. That's a problem. That's a big problem. Certainly it's true that we're involved in some very significant remediation efforts at the university. With an open admission university, I don't think you have any other choice but to meet your citizens where they are and bring them to where they want to go. I wish it weren't the case, but it is the case. And I think we just have to, until we fix that front end, I think the university needs to continue to do that. Affordability, we talked about that a little bit. Completion, do students make progress to complete certificates and degrees in a timely manner? We're just not doing very well. Not doing very well. I mean, I can parse this thing down. I can show you that that in fact, for an open admission university, the youngsters who are the typical first-time freshmen behave about like typical first-time freshmen in any open admission university. We run about the same percentage. They do fine. Our two-year folks who are signing up for 2 years, 21 out of 50 states? Is that what we were?
Right.
21 out of 50 states. So we're, you know, somewhere in the middle. But I tell you, our kids work to a degree that's different experience than the rest of the country. We have had many individuals give up the Alaska Scholars Program because they chose not to take the 12 credit hours necessary in order to maintain that scholarship, because they felt like they needed to work. So they felt they were better off working, paying for some courses on their own than they were taking the 12 hours. And this becomes a very, very difficult equation to balance. We know this, that, you know, if you work about 20 hours, it actually helps your grades. You work about 30 hours and there is huge impact, and if you work 40 hours, you got to be one of a couple of unbelievable people to pull it off. That's kind of the way it works.
You might want to mention the financial aid aspect of that, why they're working.
Well, okay, yeah. Why are they working? Well, they're working because I think I just mentioned to begin this conversation that when we start to talk about needs-based aid, the state only began that program last year, and so we don't have much, that's for sure. The federal needs grants are very difficult to qualify for, and as I say, we have upped that. I really think we have probably had four times as many over the last 3 to 4 years that we've simply walked through the process, sit down and fill out this FAFSA form, and it isn't showing much of an increase on the other side. Tuition probably covers a nice round number is half. It's about half of your college costs. Just take tuition, double it, and that's about how it'll work. Even if you're not in the dorm, even if you aren't dealing with a food plan, just a course, it's about 50-50, darn close to 50-50, tuition and books. Books are just ridiculously expensive compared to anything that any one of us would have experienced in college. It is very, very common to have a $100 plus book. Very common. Obviously, we want to work with people, make sure we're not just using one chapter out of that book, see if we can hold on to that book a little longer, but obviously the faculty is in charge of those books, and that has to be a meeting of the minds between the faculty and the student.
We do require 2 semesters. If faculty do use a book for at least 2 semesters. That's a campus policy.
Senator Wagner?
Is there a norm on that, though, nationally? I mean, I know for Wendy and I went to school, we had book exchanges and everything else, and there was a much longer requirement, it seems, to maintain those books and the addition of certain books. And I understand how expensive they are, and the more technical they get, the higher the price of the books. And it seems to me like, if it's a faculty problem, it seems to me like they're doing a total disservice to the people they're there to teach. if they are changing books that often. It sounds to me like there's a...
There certainly have discussions going on, because I'm with you. I mean, I certainly understand that there are academic reasons to do certain changes, but you know, you do get a little frustrated to see a circumstance where math, I mean, should be about the same as it was when we went to school. I mean, pretty close.
English or Western Sioux, something like that.
Yeah. So it gets very, very tough. This is an area that our students are on top of. I've encouraged them to be on top of it because, frankly, the issue is going to go a lot better as a student an issue come from the students than it is coming from the president.
Very important issue. Senator Elton.
But just as long as we're talking about it, it's my understanding, and I think it was reported on New York Times or Wall Street Journal or someplace, that you can get the same textbook for a lot less if you buy it in Britain than if you buy it in the United States.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
There was a recent report that you can buy the same textbook in Britain that you can buy in the United States, and you can get it for a lot less money, kind of the same issue as driving across the border and buying drugs in Canada. And I'll try and dig up the...
Actually, I haven't heard of that. I tell you what we have done is we've put up a common-use computer in each of our bookstores and we'll help people look for a book anywhere that they can possibly find it in the country and ship it in to us. And so a little bit of that and a little bit of cooperation, and I think we'll get some response to it. But publications are just... They really are just completely out of bounds. I mean, library costs go up more than health costs every year, if you can just comprehend such a thing. I mean, it's about 17% costs you more for journals. And this is with huge, huge numbers of those being online. We have these online subscriptions where we share with the entire state so that everybody can come in and, you know, utilize it. We have multiple orderings of periodicals and everything. And it's very, very tough.
Thank you. Wendy, did you have a comment? Did we miss?
Oh, no, I was just going to make a side comment that I will make it, though, from when Tom and I were in school and all of us in college, I'm sure, took, for instance, the big book, Introduction to Art book?
Janssen, yes.
That's the book. When we were in college, Janssen did not include a single woman artist, not even a cassat, not a single one. I still have my book at home.
No.
It's been clearly updated since then.
There you go.
It's true.
There you go.
I'll check that out. I have an old one at home. Yeah.
I bet you have your Janssen still.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay, just very quickly, benefits. What benefits does the state receive? I think all of us could talk to that from having a highly educated population. I would add this, though. Again, to stay with this very real policy theme of jobs, this is probably the most important thing for this university to get accomplished here over the next several years. We weren't in the game on the first boom. University just was not in the game. There were some decisions made that, there's an exception to that, by the way. KPC was in the game, training oil field workers, and still in that game, and still leading the way in the whole mining things being done out of that. It's a good step forward. The mining is, you know, we can predict the mining progress a little bit better than so far we can predict the gas pipeline kind of thing. But producing the workers in a state is exactly what the state university needs to do. And when you do that, all sorts of wonderful things happen. They insist of their elected officials that they support the university. They understand the university is the one that got them where they are, and they turn into a charitable alumni. There's lots of wonderful things that happen. We've got to get that right this time. One of our programs has been very successful, we've bragged about it, has got just a terrible dark side to it, and that's this APIC program where we have been working now for 7 years with the oil company to replace the retiring workforce on the North Slope. This is a workforce that for 25 years has spent their month on, 2 weeks on, whatever their schedule was, and then brought their paycheck back to Oklahoma, Montana, Seattle. You met them at the airport, you saw, running back with their paycheck to go spend it in their hometown. We have been replacing them very successfully with Alaskans. But it's good, and we should do that, and that feels warm and fuzzy, except when you realize that if you miss the boom, your next shot is 25 years later, because that's exactly what has happened. These individuals held those jobs for a quarter of a century. Same exact thing is going to happen on the gas pipeline. And you talk about a boom bust. This is the answer to the famous bumper sticker, you know. The way you fritter away a boom is you don't train Alaskans to keep the legacy jobs. Now, we're after that, and we're going forward with this about as fast as we can. We're going to double the number of engineers by 2010, and we'll meet that goal. But I can tell you, we made that same promise with nurses. We would double the number of nurses by 2006. We're going to meet that goal. But if you check your budget, I'm still requesting money for the nursing program because the state has not supported it. It's going on Denali Commission, Rasmussen Foundation, federal grants and contracts, BP, ConocoPhillips, Compact Money, SB 137. SB 137 is in there.
And employers.
What is it?
And the employers.
And the hospital workers, which none of this is untoward. Some of those things ought to, but eventually these programs have got to be filled in, because I couldn't sit there and wait for the money. The state said I got to have them, and at that stage of the game, if you're not going to be responsive to the most strident demands of your state, you just may as well fold your tent, because you're not going to get support anywhere. But we're going to do that with the engineers. These are very expensive programs, both of them. Very expensive programs. And so we've begun it. We're moving forward and asking you in the budget to help fill us back in again. We can do anything at the university. We just can't do anything much without funding.
Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President, I also have been watching, because my son-in-law is a petroleum engineer, mechanical engineer, but I was asking a couple of questions about looking at the demand for those engineers in Alaska, because we do know that exists. The oil companies are telling us that.
Sure.
We know many of the people that are working in those slots now, and they're getting ready to retire all across the state. And I was curious to see that in the master's degree program of petroleum engineer, a huge number of the master's degree students are foreign students. They're not U.S. students.
That's right.
How will that work on helping us to fill that demand in state? It appears to me, I don't know, is there a recruiting effort that's going on for foreign students versus U.S. students or Alaska students for some of those programs, or
through the chair, Senator Seekins, what you see there is a kind of anomaly that comes from the fact we have several individuals from India in that particular group, and they literally are recruiting people from their hometown. It's just a hometown connection. It's a what do they call it when one city from one country, sister city to Fairbanks, happens to be the place where these individuals have come from. And that's what's happening. The other piece of it, though, is across the entire country, we're not getting students, U.S. students, into the engineering field. Just, we're doing very, very badly. Very, very badly.
Well, these graduate students, once they finish their master's, will they return to India, or are they liable to take jobs here in Alaska?
You know, I would guess that that would be a mixed bag, heavily favoring India. That's what I would say, that they'll go home.
Yeah, and that's, Mr. Chairman, if I may, that's been the case, particularly in engineering, all over the country, predominantly. Students, a large proportion from India, but that's been changing over the last couple of years and will change fairly dramatically in the future. A lot of Chinese as well. But those countries are now making huge investments in higher education. And so you're going to begin to see fewer and fewer Indian graduate students as well as Chinese graduate students coming into this country because of their country's investment now.
Yes.
I'm just wondering if there was a, if somewhere, you know, we aren't, why aren't we appealing? What is it that's not appealing? Is it the, I mean, I know one young man who's getting his master's degree there this year. I mean, he's already been hired by BP.
Of course.
He starts at $70,000 a year plus. I mean, there's a demand.
Yes, sir.
They want them, but we aren't being able to recruit or produce or...
It's a hard curriculum. I mean, engineering is one of our most difficult curriculum. It's a five-year program where you have like three credits of electives in a five-year baccalaureate program. It's a very intense program. Our students aren't coming to us prepared. In Anchorage, they're having to spend, a year or two getting students prepared at the post-secondary level to enter engineering programs.
Right.
Because they're not coming out of high school with the kind of math and science skills that they need for these programs.
That's absolutely right.
What an opportunity for somebody for a job.
It's 100%. 100% of our engineering graduates are hired by Christmas. Absolutely. I mean, just 100%. Yeah. Not a doubt.
One of the things that they're doing, Senator, with the ANSET program, which is Alaska Native Engineering and Science program, which is a hugely successful program, taking rural-based students into engineering in Fairbanks and Anchorage. But what they're having to do is they're starting in junior high school, identifying the students who may be interested in these kinds of careers, and then they're working with them in summer programs. Right. In some cases, they're going to the high school and delivering the chemistry, math, science courses that are necessary for them to have to prepare. I mean, but it's a lot of hand-holding. And then once they get to the university, they are held as a cohort. They study together, they live together, they work together.
Well, we should be very proud of what we've done, and the fact that some of these students come from foreign countries and go back, there's nothing wrong with that. That's something we should be proud of as well.
No, but obviously, yeah.
I realize what you're saying, Senator Seekins, and we want to make sure that Alaskans get jobs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the United States has always been a beacon for the universities around the world. And
no question.
That's somehow, it's maybe going down a little bit from what it once was 25 years ago.
Mr. Chair, I can tell you that we just had some individuals over in China. They requested 100 slots. And we, of course, we can't do that. Now, the other piece of this, however, to give a more complete answer to Senator Seekins, is that the university had a fairly restricted capacity here. You can have people tell you they want these programs. You can only do what you can do, and we were doing nursing. Okay? Now we're going to jump up in these engineers, because now that's our next goal, double the number of engineers. So we're, of course, going to add courses, faculty, staff in some cases, and be able to offer those. So part of it was the demand side, but another whole part of that is the university opening up to do those. And, you know, you say, well, why didn't you do that 5 years ago? And the answer is,
Well, number one, didn't have the money to do it, and number two, the pipeline was still far enough away that we could wait and jump on it right now. Now, as they say, 5 years. Wendy's exactly correct. It's 5 years after we've gotten people prepped up to the level. So we may be spending 6 years with a lot of these individuals to get them ready to go. Now, all of a sudden, that pipeline is getting closer and closer out there. Because there's always been a demand. It's been 100% of our engineers have been hired since I've been here.
The other part of the problem is with the industry is working with us as well, and the nursing industry had to do the same thing to make their career field more attractive, because people just weren't going to come going into nursing. And at the national level, they spent millions of dollars on ads. I don't know if any of you remember these a few years ago. There were ads all the time showing nursing as, you know, being a great career. It made a huge difference. Now, the engineering is going to have to do the same thing. I mean, they have to make it. We have to get at kids when they're still in elementary and middle school to begin. If they want to become an engineer, they have to take a very different academic path in high school than if they want to, you know, be a construction worker. It's going to be a different path, and they have to get it together very early on. So the Alaska Engineering Society has worked with us. They're developing some ads. They're developing some internship programs to go into the schools, because we do have an input problem. We don't have enough students prepared to take the curriculum right now.
Thank you. I want to recognize Senator Wilkin is with us, and Senator Seekins has a follow-up to be followed by Senator Wagoner and Elton.
Just, I think that the one question I had there, Mr. Chairman, just so I guess my concern is, and while I'm proud of those people that come here from a foreign country and get an education, the people in the state of Alaska are subsidizing that education for them to go back with wherever they're going. And I'm more interested in trying to find that Alaska kid that can get that education here and fill that job. And I guess that's why I scratch my head a little bit when I see what is it about, you know, I grew up in a family of engineers.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot, I've got engineers all over my family. I'm the black sheep. But the it just seems like such huge opportunity, and maybe it is the path. I don't know what it is, but I would just, in looking at a university system, that I'm a little bit selfish with the dollars that go into it being for the benefit of the people of the state of Alaska. I wonder, you know, if there isn't something that we can do to try, even, and I appreciate the path that's being been outlined there, because it just seems like such an opportunity for kids in this state to look forward to good paying jobs and great careers. I mean, for 30-year careers without any worry, that it just puzzles me, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Senator Wagner.
I just wanted to kind of follow up what Senator Seekins was getting at. What percentage of students in our engineering programs currently in the University of Alaska are foreign students?
I don't know the number. I'll get that back to you. I think you discover it's going to be fairly small. It's going to be fairly
almost
small.
Almost exclusively at the graduate.
Yeah.
And at that stage, you have a kind of a different drill there. You know, you have
the
small population state. Our graduate courses are going to be very, very undersubscribed. And at that stage of the game, bringing additional folks in that can be taught by the self-same faculty is very much in our interest to do that. Very much in our interest to do that.
Certainly. Senator Elton.
Thanks. And I may be operating on bad information or bad memory, but
So far, that's been this whole session, I think.
I think it could have been. And so kind of a two-pronged question. Are you getting ARCO merger money for university programs? And if so, are they involved in this program?
Yes, sir, and yes, sir.
To what extent are the ARCO merger dollars funding the engineering program?
Probably about $1 million into the ANSEP part of the program. About $1 million.
Okay. in the ANSEP.
That's the Alaska Natives in Science and Engineering programs. Probably about a million. Okay. They've done some fabulous things for us with those dollars. Fabulous thing. I mean, without those dollars, the university would not have done an enormous number of things. Just couldn't do it. That's very, very significant revenue to begin a program, kickstart a program, hire term faculty. It's just remarkable to be able to have that kind of flexibility, because it enables you to respond to the needs of the state where you couldn't have done it. Without those dollars poured into the nursing program, we couldn't possibly pull that off. Could not possibly pull that off. I mean, if we just sat around and waited for the state to give us the money for it, because it's not been forthcoming to this very day. We're actually going to meet our goal. And you say, well, I mean, that was easy. We got that done without putting money in it. But the fact is, it's also tied up all that money, so we couldn't move into the next program. So,
thank you, Mr. President. Clearly, the senator from Fairbanks is not sure what that bright, shiny thing is out there.
It's a UFO.
And it's out until 9 o'clock.
Well, we sort of stopped you in mid-stride.
Well, I think. That was good. I mean, I enjoyed the questions. I did bring a demographic, Alaska population change 90 through 2005, because I had made a suggestion one time that one of the issues in our attendance at our community college might be demographically based. And I'll pass this out. But what this graph says, you can see the shape. The pieces going down, which account for 30,000 plus Alaskans, are between the ages of 25 and 40. Those are the community college attenders. We lost 30,000 of them in the last 15 years. So you lose that kind of demographic, and obviously you're going to expect to see some sort of a drop. We have not had a drop in the number of degrees and certificates. And what that really says is we have people who are coming into more formalized programs and staying longer, seeking a greater number of credits in those programs. But the actual raw number, the enrollment number of that particular group, I haven't done this yet, and I want to strip it back. It's absolutely credible in my mind. I'll have to go back and check this out. But my hypothesis is it's possible we are serving a larger portion of that particular demographic group than we were in the 80s. Quite possible.
It'd be very interesting to see that, Mr. President. I appreciate seeing a copy of that yes. chart as well. I certainly the university has done a tremendous job in attracting recent high school graduates. I mean, I think that clearly is an enormous success for the university. I am concerned personally about the number of that loss of adult students, and I don't think the number of adult students' potential has changed, but I suspect it has to do with a lot of reasons, among them the cost of tuition.
Yes.
So if you're a working, or if you're a housewife wanting to finish a degree, it's pretty expensive at $300 a credit for a class.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct.
That's an area that I would like to have us spend some more time on. Senator, welcome.
That's a very interesting chart. I've never seen that. That's statewide.
Yes, sir.
It's a scary chart.
Well, what I like to tell people about that is all 30,000 of those people had the permanent fund. Right? And they said, you keep it. I'm going someplace with a future. That's what they told us. That's exactly what they told us. And I'll tell you what, they'll tell us again. And this idea, I get very frustrated with people saying, I'm saving this for my grandparents. I wish for you grandchildren.
that will not stay in this state for $1,500 a year. I wish for you grandchildren who will seek their life and their economic underpinnings, not subsidized by a state handout.
You know, could we copy that? And,
yes, sir.
Okay. Oh, there goes our copies.
Senator Wagner.
Well, that goes back to when we used to have forgiveness on the loan, too.
Sorry, it goes back to what?
When we used to have the forgiveness on the Alaska student loan. A lot of students would come back to Alaska because of the forgiveness clause in it and not find jobs, and they would become stagnated and not be part of the workforce, especially in their chosen field of study, because the jobs just weren't here, but we incentivized them to come back anyway because they would get 50% of their loan forgiven. That was really, in hindsight, that was pretty lame for us to do that to that many people, because it was a disincentive for them to leave Alaska and find employment. Mm-hmm.
Through the chair, I think, Senator Wagner, you'd discover that a similar thought, modified, might well have some traction. I know that the very small amount of needs-based aid we have is distributed to people who are going to seek one of Alaska's high-need jobs. I mean, they have an edge. They have a little extra scorecard on there. I think it would be worth our while to look at programs that offered some sort of tuition rebate or something for individuals who completed a certificate or completed a course of study and entered into Alaska's workforce. I think it could be very, very valuable. Now, let me just say one more thing, Mr. Chairman, if I might, and then we'll answer any questions that might remain. Committees you have and everything is all your business. Let me just give you my personal wish. I hope that this committee will stay together as an ad hoc committee. I don't think you need any staff. We'll be your staff. It is so desperately important for the university to have a group of people who understand more and more and more about us. Transparency for us is not a threat. Accountability is not a threat. We are measured more ways than any profession you can begin to imagine. And I'll just tell you, the more you know about the University of Alaska, the more comfortable you're going to be. And you're not going to see a thing in USA Today that says, oh my God, they got a C and a D and an F and an incomplete, and be concerned about it. Because what this university ought to be doing is what you tell this university to do. And I can tell you, we just went through this list. You ought to be damn proud. You've given the right directions. You can see them reflected. Just look at that workforce focus reflected, and now it's reflected in needs-based aid. Okay? I mean, that policy, and maybe it's unstated, okay, but it's pretty clear to me that that's where you want it to go. You followed it with the SB 137, you follow it with questions and inquiries. It has an application on needs-based aid. You're running it right. And now to have a group of people who know more about us, can continue to answer the questions, learn more about us as we go on. And I'm sure my Board of Regents says, well, you know, what are we for? Well, they got it. They understand. And I don't think they're going to feel threatened by it. I just think it's really important for us, because to just play with the idea of oversights, there are oversights in funding the university that you will see and you will catch, because you'll know if you don't do this, they're not going to be able to do what I told them to do. So I would hope you'd consider having this committee remain. That's your business. That's just my thought. And that would complete my remarks, sir.
Well, thank you, President Hamilton. We have not had a chance as a committee to talk much about the future of the committee, but I have to apologize for the whole legislation and the fact that we are so inundated right now with PPT that we really have not had the time. And as you can see, we've had members who have not been able to attend for various and sundry reasons, primarily because of their involvement in PPT. So it's been a very tough time for the legislature. I'd suggest, and we'll talk about this later as a committee, I'd suggest that there's some very important issues we need to talk about. I mean, a great pride of what the university has accomplished, and any of the issues that the university needs to work on, you've been the first to bring them up. But to me, the issues like needs-based funding, adult education, community college admission, cost of tuition are all issues that you've been very forthcoming about, and I appreciate that. I'd like to see this committee, and we'll decide later, but have a meeting or two after session is over, if it is ever over, sometime after July 4th, maybe, Gary. But have a chance to revisit some of these issues with yourself. I think it is very important that we deal with those. Comments or questions anybody has at this time or thoughts? Gary? Senator Walker?
I'd agree, too. I guess I'm sitting thinking about some years ago when we had a group of legislators meet with the regents in UAA, and that was really been the first time that the regents and when the bank and the board, the first time they'd gotten together. So I'm thinking that same thing, Wendy, aren't you, that we would have this committee come to a regents meeting, maybe one in Fairbanks, maybe one in Anchorage, but I mean, we've got the budgets to do the travel and do the support. So I'd agree. I think we ought to stay together and just continue this effort. I think it's been parts I've set in on been very informative. One other thing I want to just throw on the table. I know we've been working hard on the mentoring project, and I know you've been beat up just like I've been beat up.
I'm sorry, working hard.
I'm sorry, on the mentoring project,
right.
And so it's been a source of great aggravation as we've been challenged to find money. But the governor has come up with some money to get us up to $4.5 million.
Oh, that's fantastic!
So I'm going to look tomorrow. I'm just going to intent language in the operating budget says university needs to play in this game. So if you can figure out a way to get us to the five, then we'll have $4 million for the teachers and $1 million for the principals. If you can't get to the five this year, then they'll just do $4.5 million for teachers and no principals, or $4 million teachers and $1.5 million for principals, whatever. But I was really happy to see the governor come up with that. And
it's wonderful.
Yeah, and I think that'll just, you know, if we just get a sustainable funding source, that will just sort of roll.
Yes, sir, I believe you.
But we'll be talking more about that.
Great. Thank you for that.
That's it. Thank you.
Wendy?
One of the things that I know a couple of you are interested in, we spent 2 days last week in Anchorage with all the community campus directors, and there are several working groups that are going to continue on this, but a lot of the issues that you and I have talked about privately, Senator Wagner and you, concerns that we have because we just won't let some old saws die, but that I think you'd be very interested in, and I'd like to, over the summer, I think we'll have a chance to talk about that. I think in terms of looking at the students that aren't here anymore, you mentioned earlier, some of the part-time students, some of the older age group, some of the students taking one or two classes. The campuses really are developing some strategies to try to figure out how to go back after that. We talked very frankly about some of the organizational issues, some of the barriers in the current structure to the campuses really being able to fulfill their community college mission, some things like faculty approval, course approval, being able to respond quickly and efficiently to industry needs. We really laid a lot of those issues out on the table and talked about them, and the chancellors were there at the meeting. And so we really had an opportunity to develop some working groups and some strategies that I think will really be very helpful to us over the course of the next year. So maybe over the summer when you have time to kind of focus on it a little bit more, we'll have an opportunity to talk.
Very good idea.
Come on down.
Wendy, you will be here in Juneau all summer, probably, it looks like. Or maybe Anchorage at the university someplace.
I think the university is invited to have our special sessions on their campus.
I think so, too.
I heard that. I think it's wonderful.
I don't think there's room out in Juneau campus, is there?
Yes, there is.
UAF will have all kinds of empty dormitory rooms, classrooms, lecture halls.
Wonderful things happen when groups gather at the university. It really is fascinating, this whole Creating Alaska thing. It's really, really fascinating.
Is that what happened to the PPT?
Oh, God, don't get him started.
We could put you on the Alaska ferry system and maybe the railroad.
Oh, man.
Move you around.
I think we'll stay in Juneau. You got to get this thing done.
Senator Seekins wants to drive that garbage truck you talked about, I think.
Right, I would. But I could have fun with that toy.
Some of our members had to run for re-election.
Diane, share with you my polite no this year for the $20 million for the needs base. And we just had a nice visit. You know, call me crazy, but it isn't so crazy. If oil goes to 40 and we don't get PPT, we're going to be a half a billion upside down next year. Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
Yes.
And I am not one that thinks the gas line is a done deal. I think it's a long ways off. That cake is a long ways from today. And I think we'll get something in PPT, but I've told people, lots of people have come to me and they said, but Gary, you're going to have another $600 million next year. And I'm saying the last thing I would do, I don't do it at home, try not to, other than credit cards, bet on the come. You'll spend it before you got it. So I said, Diane, it's $20 million out of the 08 revenue stream, your return on capital. So would you just wait a year, and let's come back and do it right, and then we won't have it. We'll know whether we've got the $600 million. We can do it properly, because I'd really feel dumb. We come back, and whoever has this job next year is $20 million short, because we started that new program. When I've been beating the drum, no new programs. Mm-hmm. So I just said that to Diane. I don't think she shared that with you yet, but that's my two bits. In the interest of disclosure, that's my reasons. I hope I'm wrong.
Well, I can tell you, just to have this body talking about how and when we're going to do it is a change in attitude that eventually is going to bear great fruit at this state.
And I told Diane that if we have PPT, then I'm right there. And you just count on me, I'll be the one that shuts it in.
You brought up a point, and I know everybody's anxious to leave, but this is an interesting point, and Diane, I think, can help you. We have this very unusual situation in Alaska where people are unwilling to take on debt for post-secondary education. Part of it comes from a lot of first-generation college goers. I mean, I think Diane's class about this problem before, but this is something that you as elected officials, when you go back home and you're in campaigns and so on, can talk about. You have a platform to talk about to parents about investing in education. Taking on debt for education is good debt. It's cheap debt. It gets paid off quickly. This idea that people don't want to borrow money to invest in themselves is kind of an Alaskan phenomenon that's a little bit scary to me. And something that I think we have to kind of develop a strategy to try to work on. I know that the financial aid people come up against it all the time, but it's something where you guys can be helpful. I mean, you can talk about this, that it's okay to borrow money for post-secondary education. You get it back in the first year or two of employment.
Diane said they floated $70 million in bonds this year. So $70 million they're putting out on the street. That's a heck of a program.
It's a fabulous program.
Well, thank you all very much. I think we went a long ways to go, but I certainly appreciate you being here. Thank you. Thank you.